Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
You guys ready? Episode 119. Hope everybody had a great Easter holiday this past weekend. In mainland China, it was just another day. No holiday recognized, but those working or doing business in Hong Kong might have noticed that it was a four-day weekend with Friday and Monday off. That's even more than in America. I remember it was just Good Friday off usually at most businesses with a three-day weekend for Easter. So Hong Kong gets a little bit of extra time. Also, I just finished reading some Dr. Seuss books to my kid, one of his favorites, and I'm convincing my wife to let me take Miles to our cross-border summit conference on Saturday, April 16th. Still negotiating, but I'll probably get him to come by at least for a couple of hours, maybe during lunchtime. I know some listeners have enjoyed me talking about him and will want to meet him, so I'm working on it. Don't worry. Okay, and now for this week's show, we have Matthew Chow from Gochi Wireless. Matthew has been working at leather goods for export for over 15 years in China, and he's only just starting with tech items. So today he's going to share some new issues presented with wearable technology and give tips and tricks for those trying to follow in his footsteps with merging these two industries. So let's listen in. So thank you, everybody, for tuning into Global from Asia podcast. We have with us Matthew Chow. Thank you for being here, Matt.
You're welcome, Michael.
Great. Yeah, we were introduced by Neil O'Connor, who's also been on the show. And you are basically many years in China, right? And manufacturing all kinds of products. Do you mind giving listeners a brief overview of you and your business?
Yeah, okay. So I was actually born in Hong Kong. So I was born in Hong Kong in the early 70s. And I studied here in a British school called KG5. And then from then, high school, and then went to Australia actually for 11 years to study my high school, and then worked for university, and actually initially started in chartered accounting in Australia. So I finished my qualifications over there, and then I came back here to concentrate on, I guess, a partial family business. We have a family business in Dongguan and also China based. We trade in leather materials. So then rather than trade in the leather material side, I decided to come back and then make shoes or make bags or accessories. So then decided to set up a factory in Dongguan area, which is my, I guess, ancestral home of 25 generations. And so we set up a factory from the land we had, and we started manufacturing for export to Australia, for States, for Japan, for Europe, for everywhere. For other brands and also for my own brands as well.
Great, great. So then that would be, to put some terms like ODM, OEM.
And so OEM, also, ODM, then OBM, I guess. Since I've ever started, I've always put my own brand in. When I came back, well, what's that, 16 years now, I've always started doing my own branding as well as the majority of my business. Because people, I guess, they come to Hong Kong back then, I have the ability to design. I travel everywhere. So it's like they say, so I always come up with new designs. I'm always looking at people's handbags and trying to improve things already. So I've always got like a fetish, you can say, look at everybody's handbag and just seeing, okay, that's interesting style. And then you always keep it in the back of the mind in terms of different directions and designs and colors and trends and what people are looking for. And then you sort of, I guess, when you hit the sampling room, you sort of already have an idea and what's what people like and what people don't like. And you already build it in. So I already developed many, many styles before the customer comes, and then they come and say, okay, I like that. Yeah, okay. I'm going to just change the label, maybe strap a little bit longer, and just change it into a pink fuchsia or whatever they want to do, a different type of leather print. And they just put their name on it, and that's called ODM. So I always have, and there's some customers say, I don't mind. I don't even have a brand myself. I like your product. I'll run your own brand. So then I can use lower minimum quantities to offer my products, and that sort of, it just makes it easy for me to expand my branding as well around the world.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're definitely ahead of the curve. Of course, you have a much different background than most Chinese, local Chinese factory owners. So you've always seen the value of building a brand for your long-term business, which is great. So I'm just thinking, I think a lot of listeners are sometimes always stuck at which product to focus on. So you've kind of have the expertise in leather. I just kind of want to kind of give people the idea of how complex this one product line could be. Cause I think people have focus problems sometimes with, they see like all these different opportunities for products to sell online. And I've been in the same situation. So we think like, even if it's just different type of material in the same kind of category, maybe give people a brief overview of, I'm sure it's very complex leather manufacturing kind of like world.
So in terms of, I guess, the product, this, because when I was in Australia, I was an auditor. And I audited a lot of shoe companies, leather companies, and bag companies. So I sort of, even with working for a lot of companies, I sort of had the focus in terms of leather products and leather goods. So then shoes, obviously everyone goes, oh shoes, is it high margins? It's like, but they don't take into account the off-sizing problems. You always end up end of the season with a lot of dead stock and off-sizings. And then like a pair of shoes, you have the width of the shoes, you have different fitting of the shoes and the molds, which is absolute nightmare of a business to do. So the high margins sort of get swallowed up in other ways as well. And so that's why I said, shoes, I don't want to get in shoes. It's very complicated. Whereas a bag or a wallet or accessory, that one bag can, if it doesn't sell and it's like a basic color, you can hold for 10 years and you can sell in 10 years time. It's in a sale to any lady around the world. There's no limitation on where you sell. So number one is you got to, the product in the end market, you got to make sure you pick the right items, easy to sell to the customer, and the dead stock issues is a very big issue, inventory you have to worry about. That's why in terms of every brand now in the last, I guess, 10 or 15 years, they've gone into leather goods and accessories, because that one bag, that it bag style, you get a good margin, and it's not something that can, you have to worry about sizing or fit, even clothing, you have to worry about sizing and fit. And so that's why all the major brands have gone into this area in a big way.
Sure, sure.
So in terms of the complexity of things as well, and then you ultimately look at your final customer. Obviously, leather materials, there's leather and there's obviously imitation. There's what they call PU or even PVC. There's different markets, different price points. So you come back to down to the customer and what people are looking for. But in terms of experience, once you hit a leather material, the perceived retail value is higher. Obviously, the complexity is involved a lot more in the costing of it. But I guess once you've delved it long enough, certain tanneries, the tanneries and the people that actually make it from the wet blue leathers all the way up to the tanning process to the finish process of the finished hides before we actually make the bag, they specialize in different materials. Some just do specialize in cow, some specialize in vegetable tan leathers, so some specialize in sheepskin. Everyone has their own different unique specialties. So if you go to a tannery, they specialize in cow, and you say, you can make sheep, you got to be careful if they can deliver it. And that's the key. It's really the relationships you build. You know that this guy, he's good and strong in something, and you develop that relationship. And that's not something you say, okay, just jump into it and say, okay, just buy it, just make it, and it's going to go out there. There's a lot of issues. You got to worry about the durability of the product, even whether the material is dyed through or not. Because a lot of leather was just cheaper out there, but initially it was a white leather or beige leather, and then just sprayed on top of it. So just as paint on top of the leather. And that's, when you use it, this corners and edge, it'll fray off and it'll come off very easily. Whereas that's the last of leather. It's not great for a high quality product. And these are things you can only learn by experience and trial and error.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, that experience is definitely something you have both as your own brand and others. So for some new buyers, what would you say is really important for them to make it? I think a lot of times the buyer wants to blame maybe the factory, but a lot of times I think it's lack of experience and lack of maybe clear specifications. So is there some tips you can give people when they're trying to get quotations and choose the factory?
When you get quotation stuff, number one, do you know what you're doing? Because traditionally we do a lot of trade shows, the HPF Leather Fair, Hong Kong Fashion Week, and just we travel around all the fairs in Mipel and Italy. And there's a lot of junior merchandisers or junior buyers, and there's like, they're doing clothing, they're doing this and doing that. But they're only 18, 20, 20, they have the experience on the product. So they don't know the specifications. So in a way, there's a responsibility of the factory to educate. But obviously there's so many junior buyers, they've only worked for a year and then they leave. So it's like, let's get to a stage where I've spent this time educating you, and you've left and you've gone to do something else. It's like, but then that education process is a continual process. You got to teach these buyers to understand, okay, it's like, your idea is great. You want very natural leather, you want to fulfill, but then it goes to you for the retail. But retailers, some markets, they said China market, they don't like the very natural, raw, scratched or leather look. So they like to have a perfect look. But it's just like these things, you don't offer those to your customers because they're going to reject it like hell. Especially nowadays with online world, people look at online, they want exactly what's on that picture. So in that picture, if it's if there's no natural scratching on it, or the scratching is different to what you're actually going to deliver them, you don't want that return rate from the product, even if you sold it. So this is something you've got to be very careful, which we teach the customers, but some of them they say, oh, but this is our feel. But then most of them come back and say, oh, maybe I should have listened to you in the first place because, yeah, this is just from experience.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. This is just an example, right? Like every product line that somebody deals with is just so deep, right? With different experience and terms and what to look for with the material, especially. So
you got to educate as well, because I've been speaking recently, I guess, in China to another couple of factory owners, and saying it's like, ah, oh, your specialist, make sure it's even clearer now. You got to be very clear. And it's like, oh, there's certain things which, if it's not in the specifications, we don't worry about it. But it's like, you've got to tell, as I say, you've got to tell the customer doesn't even know, for example, color fastness. There's some materials, like aligning materials you use, which if you use a black or a red or a deep purple colors, color fastness definitely won't hold up. You put a white wallet in and it will turn over. But it says, oh, the customer didn't ask, so we're not gonna change it. We're not gonna tell them. And it says, oh, that's not. It's like you'll end up selling the product to the final consumer, and the consumers come claim it'll end up coming back to you in a way. But they're very specific in terms of like, oh, the customer doesn't ask, we're not gonna do it. So, but this is not the way you do it, I don't think. And that's when you communicate, you make sure you can communicate to the factory or the person, really understand that ultimately I've got to have a product I'm not gonna have troubles with. Because as a retailer, you don't want to send a product and have it come back to you. That's the last thing you want. And I guess that's why I'm being doing retailing now. You sort of get a bit of feel of things as well, in terms of what people want as well, and where the main issues are.
True. Yeah, I mean, I sometimes talk about my experiences. I've had issues where basically, the factory basically said that was my responsibility to tell them exactly every specification. And I bought a table, like a folding kind of like outdoor table, and I put a sticker on top to make it look nice. And the sticker kind of, the material, when it got hot, basically was going into the US market, and it was more for college students. Mm-hmm. When they put it in the trunk of the car in the summer, it was in stores in the summer, it would get so hot the glue would melt, and mm-hmm. it would dry and it wouldn't stick back down on the table.
So
it would go back to the store, and then that was a huge nightmare for me.
but you had to supply this. You supplied the sticker, right?
Yeah, we took the sticker from another supplier we found, and we sent it to the factory to put on top.
And so it's the glue they use. It's like, yeah, that's a.
And then I was at the factory. It was, you know, I was a new to this sourcing. It was back in 08. And the factory just said, you didn't tell me it had to be at that temperature. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he didn't seem to really have any, didn't really seem to care.
Yeah. Oh, but he doesn't have. How would he know, right? It's like, is it internal furniture you put in your house? Normally, I guess, unless it's a specified outdoor furniture. But these are things that people don't know until you get that situation. That's why in terms of each product, a lot of trading companies, you got to be careful, because the merchandisers, you cannot know everything. Even if you tell me now that what the solution is for what you did is like, it might be a glue problem, things like that. But this stuff is not my specialty. I wouldn't even claim to know what to do.
So yeah, it's tricky, right? Because the factory, especially with Alibaba and Global Sources, the flood of inquiries from buyers that a lot of time are newbies looking to, you know, strike gold in Amazon or online. So, you know, it is pretty exhausting for a factory, especially with limited English or limited resources to explain to all the potential buyers, you know, the industry and the product line and the materials. So, I mean,
yeah, there's no way the factory could know the ultimate. And sometimes you don't want them to know what it's used for or whatever, right? Yeah. You don't, because that's your customer base. But then how do you explain it to the factory? It's okay, but even you probably didn't know that's going to be put in a suitcase that hit, and in the trunk, right?
Yeah,
these things, like, so you can't blame the factory, because like, even you didn't even know how the product was being ultimately used sometimes.
Yeah,
this is tricky. No one knows these things. So I don't think the factory was to blame completely for that error.
Yeah.
As long as, I guess, maybe the factory, they have a solution, maybe a glue or something else, you can give it to the supplier, like other stickers, and you can secure it on.
Yeah.
That's like a way of fixing the problem.
Yeah. Let's move on. That was a pretty big nightmare for me. But yeah, I mean, it's just an, you know, example for people to learn from, you know, listeners can learn from things like that. But
yeah.
So then, like, I guess the specifications, how should it be sent? Like, I guess it's a Word doc listed out. I mean, is there some kind of like criteria or, of course, it depends on the product and there's probably so many, it depends, but is there some kind of like tips you can give or advice?
Normally it's really communication with the factory, but now you've mentioned it, maybe there's a set format there's an app I can develop.
Yeah, there you go.
that outlines all this. The QC companies, they have certain outlines to it, but maybe there's no there is nothing as specific as what you're saying out there that I know. It's normally it's just, I guess you go to, that's why a lot of times it's easier to do a ODM. That's why I started doing retailing as well, because you get the feedback quicker. So because even when you make a style on certain different materials and leather design, you don't know until it's kind of then been used. And so you do smaller batches. And I guess the key, like I said, the lesson learned is that you always do smaller batches to test out a material until you go, okay, there's certain materials which work out for your customer market. And then you expand once you know that it is something that's workable. As opposed to saying, okay, I just want a cheap price. It's got to be, I'm going to do 100,000 units and it's going to be just dirt cheap because my market's going to be cheap. It's going to be big. It's going to be huge. And then you realize that, oh, okay, it doesn't even, the product is wrong. That extra dollar would have made a whole lot difference. So probably doing smaller batches initially, I guess, would be the really only way. And batch runs until you get the product to the, unless you know the general feedback, like reiterations of a product. That's a common sense thing to do. But
True. Yeah, well, the tricky part especially is we'll go into your product now but crowdfunding. So sometimes I knew, and you definitely have an advantage. You have a lot of experience already with manufacturing, but a lot of times an entrepreneur or a good marketer could make a good pitch, you know, online. Yeah. and get a pretty big order, right?
Yeah,
especially
yeah,
crowdfunding yeah. And then try to figure it out after that's the tricky one.
Yeah, so that's why even with crowdfunding now is like I've just started with Indiegogo. Initially, I was planning on launching Kickstarter on the 1st of March, but then I met one of the directors from Indiegogo. He came to Hong Kong. He's in charge of the China division. They've set up someone over here that runs around Asia to sort of help us over here to how we push our products. So I said, okay, it's better I know someone than not know someone in Kickstarter. Yep. And I changed it over to them. Plus, we had the Oscars, so I said I didn't want to have the media because I can't compete with Leonardo. So, so I delayed that by a week. And then we started now for about 10 days now, 42% funded for the Gochi wireless charging wallet. And it's still a learning experience. Everyone's going in terms of the media-wise. They're just teaching me the blogging. There's a muck rack. There's all this social media stuff I've got to do with the media and how things. So I'm still learning a lot now every day. And then even another guy, just another good friend yesterday said, oh, you got to hit the media wants to have a negative story. They got to have a negative story to really push out the idea. They don't want a positive story, a happy story. You got to push something out like Chinese are using social media crowdfunding to take away American jobs, things like that. and use your ass subtly in the background to get a hit on in terms of the Gochi. I said, oh, really? It's like, I don't think that's really what I want to do.
Yeah.
But then it's like, everyone just need a pitch to push a story out, which I'm just working out the details now. But in terms of crowdfunding, definitely in terms of Asia, a lot of people don't really understand what it is. So I'm spending more and more of my time just teaching them, what's crowdfunding and what you do and what the risks are. Obviously, it's the product, we do a nice video, or even if you want to do a movie or something, you got to get the money in and how you... And inherently, the project might not even you might not get anything for it. That's always a deal breaker. Oh, really? So I'm going to pay these guys to do something which I might not actually get anything for. It's like, okay. But some of the projects out there are quite extreme, though. That's what with my product, I've spent 8 to 10 months actually developing the wireless charging wallet. So they have a working prototype, and I'm quite confident in terms of the production side, the electronic side, that I can deliver what I have. There's a lot of other functions I want to add to the wallet in terms of GPS tracking and all these other RFID blocking. And there's a lot of aspects I want to add, but I'm not confident that my product is going to be able to deliver. So I took it out of the campaign. So rather than, as though there'd be the next phase of things I can add things on later on. Because obviously you go to trade shows and then you meet a lot of guys and they go, our GPS tracking service, we got the app and everything, let's link together and do something. But then you buy the testing product and it says, it should be within 5 meters. You can track something, but it doesn't work. And it's like, I'm about 300 meters from the thing. It doesn't even beep or it doesn't tell me anything. It's like, oh, maybe you're indoors. The reception isn't good. It's like, that's not the point, is right? Because the consumer, when they buy it, this one, it's at work.
Exactly.
You say 5 meters, 5 meters. It doesn't matter. Indoors, you can. There's no excuses for these things.
Exactly. Yeah. I bought one of those in a market, and it's like a, you know, basically a little device you can drop inside your backpack or something, and it's a mobile app. But the thing just beeped like it was missing, and it was sitting right next to me.
It's definitely not. The wallet, for example, you leave your credit card there and you walk out. The idea is great.
Yeah.
But like, is it how functional? And then I guess the second point is it drains your battery because you've always got to have your Bluetooth on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, I've bought a couple of devices on Kickstarter as well. And it's like, it's similar, but you've got to keep the tracking there and it's linking up. So it's like the battery drain is quite serious. So that's why in terms of my wallet now having actually battery packs of functions I can include in there because we have 4,000 milliamps of power in the wallet built in, which would be a lot more effective to add different functions to it. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. So yeah, well, it's a great product. I have the page and I'll try my best to get this online during your campaign. You're halfway now and still got plenty of time. So it seems like you'll reach your goal. Maybe talk about some of your experiences. You're a leather expert and now adding in, like you talk about Bluetooth or potentially Bluetooth and all these gadgets inside of this travel wallet. Do you maybe explain some of your experiences and kind of like this wearable or, you know, combining different industries together?
Yeah. At the moment, I guess there's all the, of the trend now is all with the Misfit, and it's been taken over by Fossil, and the movement is into wearable tech. Obviously, we have the traditional, we have the bags and leather goods, businesses, clothing area, but then everyone's adding that tech spin to it. Obviously, in terms of my product now, it's only purely a wireless charging. It's a portable battery bank linked with a wallet. But then there are a lot of issues in terms of certification. Certification, I think, is the key now. But for us based in Hong Kong, because we're based in Shenzhen, the manufacturing electronics world, a lot of iPhones are made through Foxconn there. And they're not leather products. A lot of leather goods are all made from there. Your Michael Kors handbags are all made around the corner. How you link the two together, there's the opportunity for us right here. We're not just competing on pricing, so you can't just put the production out of the Philippines or to Burma or to Vietnam. It's something where we can capitalize that as well. But the key thing is comes to certification. For example, a brand, say a brand like my other brand, Charming Pop, our certification for that is really just the crocking test, for example, color fastness, azo-free, roast, in terms of those things for low lead content, things like that. And obviously the durability of the product as well in terms of just pull tests and things like that. So there's no electronic side. But then when you hit the electronic side in battery components, there's FCC, there's the CE, a lot of other testing requirements, which is electronic based. But when you link the electronics and the leather goods together, it becomes a new dynamic altogether. Because the electronic guy says, okay, this passes all electronic tests. For me, as the leather factory side or for the handbag side, it's like, okay, this passed all my tests. You link it together, and then you add a brand to it, and who takes responsibility for this mixture of a product? Because the final testing comes on the final consumable product, which is being sold to the customer. And then it's how you link that. No, when something goes wrong with the product, who takes responsibility for it? Everybody says, it's not my fault, it wasn't my fault. So when you bought electronics, you put it into your product. There's the error in terms of manufacturing. So then even SGS and everybody, there's a new division that is starting up for wearable tech side as well and for Internet of Things, IoT, and how you test that as well. But that's all still, I believe, it's all being written up as we speak and how things should be done. So it's exciting in that way. But obviously, when you're not clear, the direction's not clear, it's also high risk as well.
Yeah, I mean, back to my little nightmare with the sticker on the table, it's not even nearly as complicated, but like you said, it was different suppliers, so they're not talking to each other. Maybe I don't even want them to talk to each other.
You don't want to, because they want to talk to each other.
Exactly.
Something is like, but you're introducing Wallapians. No, I don't think so.
Because
now the China market is very big, so you got to be careful. If you got a great idea, you can't A and B, you got to separate it. Because the China market is a very big market, and they can. And the key thing is the certification, obviously, in China, they have certain certifications, but not as strict as obviously Europe and in certain other countries. So they already save $200,000 to $300,000, I guess, Hong Kong dollars in just the certification process. So they can bring the market quicker to market, cheaper to market. But obviously, you don't want them to do a like what's these the scooters now? Those double scooters, and they're selling this inferior product. The States, and it blows up in the dorms and then it gets burned and then they ban it from universities now. Mm-hmm. So obviously if certification was done was much stricter, then that whole product line has a great future. But everyone's scared of fires now, so they don't want these big battery packs. So that's created other issues as well.
Yeah. So you're talking about certification. So It's definitely probably adding a more cost to do it correctly, right? We want our products that we manufacture to have a long-term lifetime and success. So can you give us some ideas of these newly developing certifications or processes at least?
So this is still new to me, but I've been to trade shows and other functions. And obviously talks for each of the certification companies in terms of the new requirements. For example, I think FCC starting from, I think it's July of this year, that they have a they can't certify in China anymore, which even certain factories in China just realizing, oh, really? I was like, okay. So there's certain, I guess they have to certify in Hong Kong then, or overseas, to be able to get the FCC qualification. And even, I guess FCC is only for America, CE is for Europe. There's still Japan, and there's Taiwan, and there's China, and then there's Australia. Everyone has their own certification. And each one has different expenses as well. So to get one product fully certified for electronic product fully certified around the world, that is something I think everyone, especially for a product that hasn't been validated, or I think everyone's in the same boat. So something, even in terms of my crowdfunding campaign, I've written there as a challenge. Mm-hmm, so obviously, mm-hmm. But in terms of that's why in terms of even the products, something like, oh, maybe having even early birds, $99, that's still quite expensive. But obviously, in terms of the technology side, we have a lot there. But then I've sort of got to leave a little buffer area for that certification process as well.
Yeah, I know. I understand. So yeah, or could you just maybe not allow it to be sold in certain markets to solve the cost problem?
That's what people say in the issue. You say, okay, just do America and Canada first, and then China for the three market as well. Those two, but obviously I got customers. So there's backers now from UK and everywhere. Mm-hmm. Initially for small quantity, that's not the issue. But I guess my ultimate aim for the Goji wireless technology is to really integrate it into brands as well. For example, the wallet, you add a Tumi, you add a Coach to it. That's the ultimate branding. So I just using probably like an Intel inside, so it'd be like Goji inside. So it helps you charge it there. It will help with the certification, designing it, place it into existing products that they sell best. So obviously that's the way forward, I guess, for my idea.
Okay, exciting. Exciting. Yeah. So maybe a newbie trying to get into this kind of cross product or wearable market, they're not even as fortunate as you or with your experience in your location, but they're overseas, and can they do something like this, you think? Or can they go on like Alibaba and find a leather guy and find a battery guy?
Not on Alibaba. Alibaba guys won't you wouldn't be there. Okay, so there is something. I went to there's in Hong Kong now, there is a big kick now, even in China, but probably Hong Kong as well. There's a lot of incubators now. And there's one called, they had an IoT conference called The Launch. If you go on the website, The Launch, and it happened about a month or two ago.
Yep.
And had a lot of good speakers there, and I joined a two-day function, and we listened to a lot of startups and their projects and experiences, and also the investment side, and a lot of aspects of it. And there's the company there called Brink, which is based in the PMQ in Hong Kong, and they're more after, so for companies like overseas foreign companies that have a design, have an idea, but they don't have the manufacturing, that connection over here, and they would have to come over here, and they would join up with Brink. But I think with Brink and other these other small startups, they're looking for partnerships with a equity or a debenture sort of a system set up. So they want to have a share of your company first before they'll start really promoting you, I believe. But I've still got to meet them more and discuss what they're offering. But obviously, if you have no experience, you've got great ideas, sometimes this side is very important as well. And obviously, still they're quite young in that. And this whole industry is very young, so it's really, you would still need to come over and speak to them and sit down and see if it's the right fit or not. But definitely, if you're just gonna, you have a great idea and you've got the good marketing and you've got the traction, but the manufacturing side, you need to knuckle down over here in Hong Kong, Southern China. Really, you got to knuckle through yourself. Every business industry is different. There's going to be things that come up which you just never expect, and it's just going to be solved quickly. Yeah. Things can be done quickly here, but you've got to know exactly what you want to achieve in terms of molding, what you want to pay, and how things and just connections and spend time just really just be in the factory's face in a way, just so you can solve things quickly. Because in the factory, last thing I want to do, even if they're very interested in the work with you and then your pricing, everything is good, you've got to, they don't want to do multiple sampling. For example, if you say, I do one sample here every week, and then you do another sample then, mm-hmm. it's like, they just get it right the first time or the second time, third time, it's like, get the product out there. Because they're in terms of their sample masters or like the engineers, it takes time to do everything, to make changes. So you've got to be very clear in what you want done over here. Because it's still a very big OEM mentality. People is like, you got to tell me what you want. You want me to think for it for you. It's like, that's not their job.
Exactly.
A lot of guys, because ultimately there's a lot of things like, if they get it wrong, you'll blame the factory. But it's like, if you're not clear, it's like,
exactly.
Like, sometimes a lot of designers and a lot of ideas, they had the grand idea, but they don't know the specifics. But if you don't know the specifics, like when something goes wrong, you can't blame me because you didn't tell me what you wanted. Sometimes you don't even know yourself what you want because it's such a new area.
So
it's hard to blame anyone in that sense. So you just got to really work as a partnership. The first project doesn't work, the second one, keep a good relationship, and just you just keep building on to the next stage. Because if this project doesn't work, the connection there will lead to something else, and you would still have a relationship, working relationship with a good reputation, I guess. You can sort of build the next thing.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I think a lot of times, let's say, I guess the word would be foreigners or people that aren't as experienced, at least in the China manufacturing, it's easy to blame the factory. And I've done it myself in previous projects. As I've gotten older and wiser, and it's a lot of times you're just like developing an app or developing a technology product. If you give very unclear specifications and requirements, you're basically outsourcing it. So how can they read your mind and know what you want? You have to be like double or triple as clear with what you want.
Then you got to think of, can it be done? Because obviously some of the factories, they'd say, this is what I really wanted. But then like, sometimes, and then they say, have you considered this? Have you considered that? And you go, oh, maybe I haven't. But then it's like, that's going to change my product. Sometimes, I guess you can sort of, it's not really bastardizing your design, your initial idea, but it's really, I guess it's limitation what you can do, because obviously everyone wants the perfect design, right? And you can take compromises, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Got it. Yeah. So how can people, I'll link the websites and everything, but how can people reach out to you and your company?
So the easiest thing would just be go to gokiwireless.com, GOKIWIRELESS.com, wireless.com. Yep.
Yep. Great.
And then there's some social media or links there as well. And then obviously from there, you'll see my personal profile on LinkedIn and everything. You can contact me there directly if you like to.
Great.
And if any feedback would be good, because I'm new to this as well.
Sure.
And we're all, it's a brave new world.
Yeah. And this is the thing about, there's the marketers that can't manufacture. There's the manufacturers that are learning to market. Then everybody's trying to do everything, and it's a crazy world now. Everything is out there, just out in the open. It seems like online, and it's amazing. Yeah.
But with technology, there are things you can do by yourself which you couldn't do before. That's the thing. There's a lot of new apps, there's a lot of new websites, and you realize, it doesn't take long to learn. It'll take me a few hours to learn that. But then once you learn, it's like a skill, it's like a language. You learn it, and you can use it for many projects later on.
Yeah.
So it's worth the time. That's why it's a lot of late nights now, just learning, exactly. Understanding. Exactly. It's all fun. All in good fun.
Yes, that's the thing. To be an entrepreneur, I think we have to love learning, right? I think if people don't want to learn, they shouldn't try to do their own venture, because no matter how much you think you know, there's always going to be more to learn.
So. Exactly. You're learning, compromising, and just enjoy yourself as you go. Got to enjoy the process.
Yeah. Great. All right. Thank you so much. And
thank you very much, Michael.
That's a wrap. Thank you, Matthew, for sharing. If you guys could do him a favor and check out his Indiegogo campaign, even if you can just share it on your social media channels or with friends you think would be interested, it would be really a great, great thing to help him out. Got a little bit of time left, over a week, so let's show some support. And that's all I have for this week. If you know any friends, family, or people in the industry that may enjoy this show, nothing helps more than telling your friends and word of mouth. I know a lot of listeners have heard about the show from their friends, and it seems like that's the best way sometimes rather than iTunes and Google gods to let us be found. So we have great interviews already lined up for the next month. So next week, we've got another crowdfunding campaign, which he's done three different ones and is pretty amazing with global business. So yeah, we'll keep you on the edge of your seat to know more, and I'll catch you next week. Until then, enjoy your week this week and to your success in international business. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.